The shit show.
Yeah, that was a shit show.
All right, guys. So we're welcoming to the shit show artist Drew Mazur. He was known predominantly as a 10-year veteran in the body modification and tattoo industry. Now, got a much longer bio, but I feel like we got to start there because
totally.
Drew is tatted out in the best way possible. And it's amazing. Morgan had a question about body modification.
Yeah, I mean, Drew looks like to be a work of art. Tattoos are always like super interesting, I think, to anyone, just because there's so many meanings that go behind it and there's so many reasons why someone would get like a tattoo or go through body modification. So if you just want to tell us a little bit about like the history of how you got into tattooing and body modification and what it is about tattoos and body modification that people find so interesting in your eyes.
So I guess one thing that stuck out to me about what you said, just in regards to like, you know, what's special about tattoos to me, I know you worded it just a bit differently, but I have a very ironic conversation with a lot of my clients. I work in a very high volume setting.
Okay.
Long story short, I'm working at this shop where we run these specials and we're right next to, you know, the University of Texas. So I'm doing things with piercings and body modification that I never thought humanly possible. Like, you know, 10 to 12 piercings a day over a 10-hour span would normally be something for a piercer to celebrate. Then I start working here. I come in on a Sunday during this day that we run the specials prior to being hired there, and there's a line out the door. I go to the only person that I know in Austin, Texas. It's my buddy Darren, and he's got this big list, and this is prior to us being paperless. And it's just like nose X2, nipple X2, nipple X2, dermal anchor, blah, blah, blah. Just an endless list.
We love the dog.
Okay. Yeah.
Ballet service. So this is typically the time when they're going to start barking. Shut up. Sorry. He's blind and deaf, so he doesn't know that I'm talking.
Oh,
no. That's so sad.
What are their names?
I had the road a long time ago. The vet said he was between 2 and 8. So I left you with no gate.
Oh, my God. He had some body modification himself.
Honestly, he has. He could probably use some. But yeah, I'm like, is this a list of things that you're doing right now in regards to this endless list of piercings? Like, yeah, just call off the list, you know, first come, first serve. And I'm like, I've never seen anything. This is like a assembly line.
Right. Wow.
So I'm like, I need to speak to your manager. And I talked to him. I was like, I'm Drew. I just moved here. Like, I want to be here. Long story short, that ended up working out. So every Sunday, I'll normally, you know, have about between probably 60 to 100 procedures over like an 11-hour period.
Wow.
And these might not be, you know, 60 to 80 to 100 different people, but in essence, it's relatively close to that, depending on how many one person's getting.
Right. And so that's the place to be. What's the difference between a piercing and a procedure, would you say?
Oh, procedure is just my fancy way of saying
it. Oh, all right. Sounds nice. I wasn't sure if like, I don't know, anything that took longer than just like an ear piercing was a procedure or, you know.
Sometimes people need things removed. Like sometimes someone will show up and be like, I need to get my nose ring removed. And I'm like, what nose ring? And they're like, it grew into my nose like 6 months ago and I did nothing about it. And I'm like,
oh,
okay. So we're going to have to map out a whole way for me to like scalpel your nose open and pull that thing out.
What's the most like intense thing that somebody's had done? Because I always say that like, because there's such a stigma around body modification and tattoos, but like, if we're all supposed to be in a, like a fucking free country, like everybody should be able to do whatever they want. That's what living in a free nation is. And I think that people who are really creative do treat their bodies like canvases to like paint over and like make their own artistic creation. But what was something that somebody came in and said, I want this done. You were like, all right, I don't go fucking get it, but let's do it.
Well, there's like sort of a fine line I won't cross, only pertaining to safety. Mm-hmm. Like a few years ago, there was this image circulating around the internet. To this day, I still don't know if it was real or not, but it was like a butt crack piercing. It started like at the tip of the butt crack and ended up, you know, I guess if you were a dude, where the hair on your back would start a little bit. And I had a lot of people asking for that. And I was just like, I'm sorry. And I can. They're like, well, why? I mean, I'm sure you can. And I'm like, well, in my mind's eye, just, I don't see how in the world you're going to get this butt crack piercing without developing an infection from your, you know, wiping shit all over it.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah. Literally.
That I didn't do. But I mean, I guess what most people would consider intense would be, you know, some of the genital stuff. I've had to, you know, do some large gauge piercings through scrotums without nicking anything besides the scrotum.
Through like, oh, a bit, like a penis scrotum.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah, a legit scrotum. Oh my God.
I don't know. You know, after 10 years or so, you become a bit desensitized. Like if someone walked in and said, I'd like my scrotum pierced, I wouldn't be off put, but I mean, you know, it's not something that happens every day, but I'd be like, sure, it's actually a pretty simple procedure to do.
Right.
You know, it's pretty, not a lot going on there. You just gotta make sure you don't pierce their balls, their actual balls.
Oh my God. So like, do you find that there's, yeah. Do you find that there's some, like trendier piercings that come in, like in and out of trend? Like oh, yeah. A lot of people, yeah.
Speculate on them all the time. Because there's, so, you know, with the high volume that I deal, I mean, even during the week, I deal with high volume. Not like 100 people a day, but, you know, 16 to 20 to 30. When we reopened after the lockdown, I don't know why, but I was doing 60 piercings a day. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe people are willing to put themselves at such risk. I mean, yeah. I have to provide for, you know, my daughter being a single father. It's like, I got to go to work.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I would not be here in a tattoo shop. But anyway, I'm sorry. What was the question again?
No, that was it. I was just curious about like trends and, you know, if there are more popular piercings.
That's what I wanted to note on. There'll be days where it's like, when I remember when I first started working at this particular shop, everyone wanted their lip pierced twice in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that this was because Little Wayne had that at the time.
Yeah.
Double nostrils has been a big thing lately. So normally when I start seeing that trend, I'll just ask my client, like, what celebrity has this right now? And I can normally link it back to somebody. One of the nipples became huge. I mean, they're always in and out, but they're always there. But yeah, I found out that there was an image of like one of the Jenners circulating around where you could clearly see that she had her nipples pierced.
Yeah.
And I didn't even bother asking questions.
You're like, everybody's going to be in on Sunday. They're all going to want their nipples pierced. Here we go. Let the floodgates open.
More nipples than I was nostrils, which is really saying something because I, you know, I would say nostril would be the most common thing I do. That never really goes out of style, but I can definitely tell when there's some kind of other incentive, for lack of a probably better word, behind the, you know, why someone or why so many people are getting one thing.
Yeah.
Now, obviously this is like an industry that is art founded. Like it's all founded in creativity and art. And obviously you're a creative person. And I find that, you know, people have specific shit show experiences that happen to them that make them lean into creativity. So what do you think really made you lean into creativity and specifically get into this kind of industry?
Well, I, you know, believe it or not, when I was in third grade, I grew up in New Jersey. All my friends were Italian. My best friends were like Vinny Lombard and Blaise Gasparri, who both had their left ear pierced with a little gold stud and had a little gold crucifix that I wasn't allowed to wear because my mom's Jewish and she'd kill me if I ever did. But I wanted to be just like them. So I begged and begged and begged to have my left ear pierced. And I went to the mall and I did it. And I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, like some kind of crazy rite of passage. I'm like, look, I'm just like all my Italian friends. And I got into piercing because my first girlfriend ever, I was heavily into body modification and stretching ears and all this stuff. But this girl that I was dating was like, I'm just going to order a bunch of supplies and start piercing people. So the school day would end and she would invite five people, or five people would invite her over, and she'd make $100 just doing a handful of piercings. And, you know, as like a 15-year-old kid, I was like, wow, that was a really quick way to make $100. Like, wow. And then one day she pierced this girl's septum, like the middle of her nose, and it went in through the right part, but then it came out through the tip of her nose. And I saw this happening and I was like, and I just walked away. I was like, I don't even want to see the rest of this fail. That scared her away from piercing completely. But I was kind of shadowing her, kept doing it. A friend of mine who was a real piercer was like, hey, I know you pierce people, so I want to be an electrician. I don't want to leave this shop without a piercer. Would you like a formal apprenticeship? I was like, sure. And that was it. But yeah, my mom actually sent me a picture a few years ago. I had a project in third grade that was like a draw what you want to be when you grow up. And I drew myself as the like the person with the piercing gun and piercing for good.
Oh my God.
Wow.
So that's, you manifested that completely.
Big time. And yeah. I totally forgot, obviously forgotten about that as later, but yeah, I've
something that always you found.
And I've romanticized and
yep, exactly. Anthony and I talk about manifesting, romanticizing everything. So you're speaking the right language to the right people.
If people look at it like this voodoo magic thing, it's like, nah, if you really, really, really think of, you know, it'll, that's what I try to instill in my daughter. I'm like, you'll get what you want if you want it and you think about it.
Yeah.
What you think about is what's, you know, in essence.
It's a law of attraction.
Yeah, I believe in it. Absolutely. Yeah,
for sure. So would you, so you do piercings too, correct?
Most.
I mean, tattoos.
Oh no, I don't do,
don't do tattoos.
I do really, really bad tattoos, but I don't do it for a living.
Okay. All right. Very
what inspired your tattoos?
Yeah. I see one on the palm of your hand and like as a cube.
Yeah, I did that. I thought it'd be cool to have a cube on my hand. That was awful. Everybody told me the palm was terribly painful, and I was like, it can't be any more painful than getting your throat tattooed. And this little tattoo was like probably a lot worse. And then it started to make sense to me. I'm like, this is your sensory area. This is where you like need to have sensitivity.
Oh yeah, you get the giant, like I got the smallest paper cut on my finger yesterday. I thought I needed to go to the hospital.
Once you're sitting there in pain in your hand, you're like, yeah, this makes a lot more sense now that I'm, but you know, you had asked originally, I think you asked something along the lines of that, like the maybe something behind the inspiration behind my tattoos.
Yes, yes.
Tattoos, and to be completely honest with you, and this also shocks a lot of my clients because, you know, a lot of these tattoo TV shows have kind of like led people to believe that there has to be some kind of big, long, happy or sob story behind a tattoo. And when people are like, what's that eagle on your neck mean? I'm like, oh, I've always thought eagle tattoos were really badass.
Yeah.
Right. That's simple as that.
Yeah. So a lot of it's decorative. The smallest, simplest ones are the ones that are special to me. Like I have my daughter's name on my sideburn, and I have a really poorly done mom tattoo that I got on Mother's Day that she got really mad at me about. She's like, "What was that for you? Like, you suck." And I was like, "No, I love you."
I love you though.
Yeah, that's I guess the tiny ones mean a lot to me.
No. In your eyes, where do you think, you know, this is alluding back to what Anthony said before, that there's some sort of stigma around body modification and tattoos. Where do you think that that came from? And do you think that there's a way out of it?
Probably from like your typical American dream, 1950, you know, perfect little life, white picket fence. I mean, people that got tattoos were like really gnarly people. They were like sailors and, you know, really rough people, or like freak show people. Like, you know, relatively not so long ago, someone like me could absolutely have applied to work for a freak show or a circus look at the man with all of the tattoos. There were all kinds of those. I mean, but that's where they went. That's what they did.
I saw that in like the 60s in Florida. I think it was Jupiter, Florida. They had this freak show and there was like a tattooed guy as a freak. I was like, all right, well, like try going to Brooklyn. I guess you could get free admittance.
Yeah, and you know, now that you mention it, I'm pretty sure tattooing was illegal in New York up until about the 70s or 80s, which is pretty wow.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, it was, you know, rough people got tattooed, real rough people without a ton of a future. How we broke away from that, you know, there's a lot of pioneers in the industry, like Bowery Stan and Crazy Philadelphia Eddie. I don't know exactly what these guys did, but my old boss worked under Philadelphia Eddie, and he said he really pioneered making tattoos a little bit more mainstreamed, which was like not so much on purpose, but you know, instead of, I mean, because there's one point you go into a tattoo shop and there's just a wall and there's some sparrows and anchors and this and that. And they all actually meant something. Like a little bird right here meant that you had spent X amount of miles or years or knots or whatever it is on the sea. Mm. So a lot of these tattoos were for like very specific people for very specific reasons. And I think it wasn't until a tattoo artist was like, let's make a sheet of just like hearts and mom and this and that. And memorial tattoos were a big one. And then all of a sudden, you don't have to be a sailor. And then all of a sudden, someone walks into a shop and they're like, I like that, but maybe we could do a different name. Or yeah. It just kind of slowly evolved from a very like pick it and stick it. Here's 10 designs. That's how it was. It was 10 designs on a sheet and you pick one.
That's so interesting because I feel like with sailors and people who were getting tattoos back in like, you know, the 50s, like you were saying, they almost wore it like a badge of honor. And I feel like, you know, with their profession, and now I feel like people wear their tattoos like, you know, for recreation as badges of honor too, just in a different way. Like Anthony has a couple tattoos that I know he's proud of and they mean something different. And something special to him and to him. I mean, I'm guessing they're like badges of honor. At least that's how I look at them.
Well, I think we need to break like the stigma too of like, and I thought that was interesting that you said that, Drew, because it really is like an art form. It's just an art form that you wear on your body. And like, I write music, like I write poems. It's not like there's some giant story behind all of them. And I feel like you police yourself when you get a lot of tattoos and you're like, well, this one means this and this is why I got it. Like when I write a song, it's not like why, it just happens. Like it just happens sometimes.
So it's so multifaceted. There's so many different reasons. I mean, that someone can get tattooed. I mean, there's days where I've even just been approached by a friend of mine at the shop and he's like, I really want to tattoo this. And I'm like, I'll do that. I'd like that.
Yeah. Very
simple as that. Or it could be something, you know, for a loved one or, you know, there. Yeah. It's such a spectrum. At one point it certainly was not.
Right.
Yeah. I find it interesting. Like the shocked look on people's faces when they're like, yeah. And, you know, or I'm just like, yeah, I love Eagles. And they're like, looking at me like I should continue. And I'm like, yeah. That's just,
now, what do you say to like the asshole people who are like, oh, like, cause I get, people have said it to me and I have like the tiniest freaking tattoos. They're like, well, what do you think you're going to look like when you get older and you have all these tattoos? You just want to like punch them in the face. Like, what do you say to somebody like that?
You know, the only people that have really said that to me were like my family members when I was younger and had just started doing that. You don't get a lot of questions like that in a tattoo shop. Normally when people come in a tattoo shop, they're trembling. So like, I don't know if it's that they're nervous about what they're about to do to themselves or have me do to them, or an abrasive atmosphere that they might be expecting. But I don't really deal with questions like that so much.
That's good to know. So it is being broken, that stigma a bit.
Oh, and you know, that's another thing. Living in Austin, Texas is really nice because nobody turns their head at me. I go back to Philly, I go to Cherry Hill Mall and it's like, damn, he tied it up. And it's just like, yeah.
Yeah, you nailed it. Like,
So interesting.
And nobody really talks about it. I mean, everybody here, I mean, there's even people that'll come in and out of town, like one of my shops on I-35, and that's like an enormous, like one of the biggest spans of highway in the country. Mm-hmm. So some people will just stop in and they're like, yeah, hey, well, we're in Austin, so we're gonna, you know, getting our tattoos while we're here. We always do that every time we come here. And so it's, you know, it's like the tattoo and piercing place, which is cool and it's lucrative and fun for me, but I also find it like just slightly corny sometimes. And I'm like, you just, I don't know. I looked at a body modification when I first started doing it, whether it's a piercing or tattoo or whatever it may be. It was a really sacred thing to me. It was really special to me. And I had my ear stretched really big, which my mom hated.
I bet.
But I was like, to me, this is just a symbol of how hard I worked to modify my body this much, you know, like I was able to do this.
Right.
And, it definitely, when I got into it, I feel like it meant a lot more to me. And now that I have been in it for 10 years, I feel like I've almost it's become a bit watered down to me a little. I look at it more like, yeah, it's a tattoo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Piercing, you know.
I wonder if it was just when you got in, you were so new and like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and now there's more of like the business aspect to it. Also, I mean, I was looking at your Instagram, and I was looking at some of the molds and toys that you have on there, which were like so cool, because Anthony and I are both into like pop art and like very like campy styles and stuff like that. So I saw a lot of the artwork on there, and I just wanted to know what your inspiration was behind a lot of the like satanic, anti-religion, religious pieces, everything like that. They're very cool.
So, you know, that it's a tough one for me to like give a real hardcore honest answer. Well, I can give you an honest answer.
You can get as morbid as you want.
I want to like blackball myself and have religious people hate me? But you know, to be completely honest with you, I grew up in a household that was half Jewish and half Catholic. Predominantly my mom was like, you're not bringing the Catholic shit in my house, to my dad. So they kind of like canceled each other out a little bit. We did the Hanukkah and the Christmas, but we didn't go too deep into Jesus or God. Fast forward to me being a young adult or late teenager, I'd probably consider it more so. I was just, you know, being a kid, and I was like selling a little bit of weed out of my apartment. And this kid, Eric, that I went to preschool with, I went to a Jewish preschool. He came over one day, and, you know, everybody at one point becomes aware of the stories of like the priests that do terrible things to kids. And I never loved that. And I was like, that's so strange that like a man of God could do that to, like, you know, it didn't click in my head as to why they could do that to a kid. He comes over and he's like, yo, did you hear about Rabbi Newlander? And I'm like, who's Rabbi Newlander? And he's like, he was the guy who ran our preschool, or the synagogue that our preschool was hosted in. I was like, yeah, I know. Okay. I was like, yeah, I don't remember his face, but yeah. And he's like, yeah, he had his wife killed. And they ended up killing his son too by accident, and he's rotten in jail. I was like, wow, that's awful. Why? And apparently, as a rabbi, you're not allowed to denounce, you're not allowed to divorce. You have to denounce from the temple. So somewhere in this guy's head, he was like, well, I hate my wife anyway, so I'll have her killed and I'll continue to be able to be a man of God in the synagogue. Obviously didn't work out for him. And when that happened, something really clicked. And I was like, don't get me wrong, and I should probably put a disclaimer on this. I know and love, you know, great Christians and Jews and Muslims and whatever they may be, but I feel like you dive too deep into your religion, like too deep, and you develop a broken moral compass, because you have Jesus Christ and people, you know, and I respect people who try to live Christ-like, but you have these pimps, you know,
another conversation.
Yeah. pinky rings and the jewelry, and then they're doing stuff to kids, and you know, and then you have, I mean, without going too deep into it, you have all of your stereotypical extremists in every religion. The only thing I can really connect to all of those is that they're extreme about their religion, and it causes a lot of pain and a lot of death and a lot of, you know, like in the Dark Ages, and someone's like, oh, you know, you can't leave the ham out because the ham will get this bacteria, and people are like, you're ridiculous, and you're like, okay, well, if you don't believe me, I'll go up to this mountain and I'll carve in a stone that God said you had to be kosher. And they're like, oh my God, he was right. And
wow, yeah.
Totally. And like every religion comes back to like the central idea. And this is what I really liked about your work, that it, the way that I interpreted it was because it kind of looked like, what's her name? Mother Teresa. And there was the upside down cross. And I was like, it's literally what I've been trying to say to people during, especially during this political climate, because what every religion comes back to, whether you're Muslim or Catholic or Jewish or whatever, the main moral compass is supposed to be love thy neighbor. Like that's just supposed to be it at the end of the day. But all we seem to hear from these religious things is like hatred and bigotry being weaponized in the name of religion. And it's like, how ironic. It's like Mother Teresa, she did all these amazing things. Like that's exactly what it's supposed to be. And it's like, she's upheld in so many people's homes, or like the Virgin Mary, where they just like so cavalierly are like bigots or like excuse pedophilia. And it's just like nuts to me. Cause it's like, that's supposed to be your moral compass. And it's just not.
Yeah. You know, and for example, you could strike up an argument about someone with that, and get punched in the face for your, and then all of a sudden that love thy neighbor thing flies right out the window over essentially blind faith.
Yep.
You know, right. So God forbid, you know, no pun intended, that you even strike up a conversation like this with certain very religious people and you're demonized over it. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, just like almost going back to the Dark Ages, like, you know, if they found you with a cut or a wound that was real serious and you were trying to remedy it with herbs, you're there, you're in trouble. You're a witch. Right. It's like, if prayer's not going to fix it, then don't bother. Like that, then it's supposed to be this way. And it's just a means of control. And like I said, I think it was a pretty good one for like a barbaric society that thinks, well, there's gotta be some kind of, you know, like, and I'm not saying there's not, I wouldn't consider myself like a total atheist. I feel like organized religion was almost like a political means of controlling before a lot of other things were proven. So now that we're in the age of information, I find it silly and kind of sad that we live in a time where we have all these resources and tools and we throw them to the back. And, you know, without getting into politics too much, it's like, you can tell that some of these people have these ideologies about certain politicians. I mean, I guess I'll just say it. It's like some like real far right Trump supporters are like, that's like our Jesus and we'll follow him no matter what he does. It's exactly. Like, well, why would you do that? It's like, why would you do that? Why would you follow him into the dark if that's where he was taking you? But yeah, it's this, right. It's ingrained in us, and you're ingrained to believe that there's this merciless God that's going to send you to hell but at the same time, they're very merciful. And just so long as you say sorry and repent, then they'll forget.
Like play by their rules, then you're fine. But it's like those rules are so skewed. Yeah.
It's like what's the word I'm looking for?
Double-edged sword, I think.
Hypocritical.
Hypocritical.
It's just like, you're going to go to hell, but you won't go to hell. He's merciful, but he's merciful. It's just like, which you got to pick a lane.
It's an oxymoron, yeah.
You're damned if you do.
That'd be a good way to put it. But yeah, it's all real, real dumb to me. And, yeah, a lot of my toys are definitely inspired by my feelings about that. Because I think it's kind of like a cute and funny and dark way to, I don't know, maybe make people pay attention to it, mm-hmm. or maybe express myself, I'd say, more than anything. Because I can go on Facebook and write about this stuff and get in arguments all day, but I love art. I love art toys. I don't really have any inspiration so much behind my sacrilegious toys. I think it's really just more, I want to make toys, I want to make art, but what do I what am I passionate about?
Right. Like, what message do you want to get across? And I feel like that's what a lot of artists do. They try to find a good way of expressing themselves while also finding a message that a lot of their, you know, fans, followers will resonate with too.
Yes. Yeah. And I like to leave it somewhat interpretive. Not all the time, though. Sometimes I like to make it specific. I mean, even the Virgin Piss Mary, as I call her.
Was that the one that I saw?
Yes. Yeah. I think I have her right here. Yeah, she's in a little urinalysis cup.
Yeah, that's so wild.
My God.
Actually inspired. This is one of the only pieces of art I've made that was inspired by someone with similar ideology. There was an artist named Andreas Serrano, and he did this. There's like a photograph of a crucifix in what appears to just be like a weird yellowy orange lighting. And he was one of the first openly gay pop artists. And the far right really didn't like him. Because that crucifix was only in this weird orangey-yellow tinge because he put it in a mason jar and pissed in it over and over again until it was full. And then he got real close and started taking pictures. And when people found out what that was, he was like exiled. And I was like, that's so cool. This is going to be an Andreas Serrano tribute piece. And this is not my first piss toy, but I was like, I'm certainly going to tribute him for that. Because I admire that.
Now, did you actually pee? Is it actually made of your pee?
Oh, no. But, you know, it would be interesting if I could integrate my own urine into this. I don't know if that would sell or not. But I did consider maybe like filling the cups with some kind of yellow liquid just to add to the whole.
Mm-hmm.
Be on some presentation of it. But when you go to the post office to send this stuff out, they're like, is there any like thing hazardous or fragile and liquid? And I have to be like, yeah, all of them. So
I know your stuff has been featured in stores and galleries in Austin, Texas, Chicago, Philadelphia, and you have the online galleries, Gallery F and Stormy Vault. What would you say that your audience is primarily? Like, if you were to create a sample size, because I feel like this is interesting for every artist to do, to be like, who are the types of people that are consuming my work?
You know, ironically enough, and this kind of is cool to me, but also kind of insulting, I'd say the people who buy the most from me are people that are like, I just want to buy all this stuff before you blow up. And I'm like,
oh, I've heard, yeah.
Thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, it's exciting. It's like big order, here you go. But then I'm like, do you really like it? Like, do you like it or are you buy? Because I mean, I do that as a consumer of art toys. It's like these things, these Tech 63s, they're cool. Don't get me wrong, but they're not my favorite toy. Like these cause toys in the back room, one of the, and you know, I'm surrounded by art and I have been for so many years, but not until I saw actually this particular piece did I get punched in the gut by art. I just separated with my kid's mom and I was living on some girl's couch and I'm scrolling through Instagram and I had already been slightly collecting this stuff, but then I saw this and I didn't know the artist, but I was like, oh my God, like looks like real dead in the face. He's got these X eyes, but he's got his back arched real straight and he's carrying these crying kids, but he's like still moving forward. And
yeah,
it spoke to me louder than any tattoo or drawing or painting ever has.
Yeah, that kind of made me emotional looking at that.
Yeah. You know, it came real full circle because at the time, you know, going through a breakup and doing the custody stuff kind of bleeds you dry and you don't have a lot of money, and you also kind of don't realize how much money you've been wasting when you're with someone and like paying for their nails and this and that. And anyway, long story short, a year later I have money, I have a nice place, and I got to take my daughter, who I was very proud of at the time because she was two, but she drove 3.5 hours to Dallas with me just to see the actual 30-foot bronze installation at the museum of that particular piece, and then I brought one home from the museum. So it went from me on a couch, like looking at that picture about to cry of that toy, to me and my daughter admiring it. We got a private viewing of it because it wasn't wheelchair accessible. and it was actually closed, but I bitched to everyone. I'm like, no, you don't get it. I was like, I just drove this 2-year-old here and she was good in the car the whole time. I didn't come here to see the museum. I came here to see that. So they showed it to us privately. And it means a lot to me. That, and I'd say comparatively to tattoos and other art, it's like art toys mean a whole lot to me. And but yeah, you know, in regards to this, back to what I was saying, I can trail off, I'm sorry. I started buying these little Tech 63s because I noticed that you could buy one for like 40 or 50 bucks. And once it was sold out, if it released at 12 p.m. and be sold out by 12:01 p.m. And then all of a sudden this is worth like a couple hundred bucks. So sometimes I'll just buy an art toy because I'm like, this is a good investment, you know? And so I'm like, do people invest in my toys? That's cool that they think they're cool enough too. I think a lot of people think my reputation in the tattoo industry and some of the people I know, it's like some of my buddies are friends with some real, you know, famous people. I think people are just like investing in my stuff. Although some of my toys, people have told me like the story behind that and how that came to be is like, I need that. That is so crazy that you made that. And that means a lot to me. I like hearing that a lot. But yeah, a lot of it came
from like positive reinforcement.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I'd say honestly, the majority of my toys either came from some kind of childhood trauma or something I don't like about the world. Most of it is almost like some people like write a letter and burn it and that's therapeutic for them. And like, I'm gonna put this out there. And I really didn't intend on it, but I realized as I kept making toys that they're all pretty related to things that really hurt me as a kid for the most part. And they're all like kind of cute and kind of weird, but kind of dark. But I don't know, maybe I'm sure if I talk to a therapist, they probably say, yeah, this is all a reflection of like your childhood trauma. And, you know, I wasn't such a great teenage to young adult. I had a pretty rough go, you know, that I can really only attribute to my own choices. But yeah, I've been through a lot of therapy and intensive treatments, and I when I'm doing something, I'm like, okay, I know what I get where this is all coming from. So yeah, they all kind of have a bit of a story for the most part.
Can you give us an example of one of the toys that has a traumatic story behind it?
Yes. I'd say, and as much as people probably wouldn't think so, Eric Sindros, I was really stoked on this. This is kind of what you'd consider a bootleg toy or a kit bash, some people would call it. I didn't sculpt the majority of this figure. I only put accents on it. I was at a thrift store in Texas. I've had a rocky relationship with my father pretty much my whole life. Shitty dad, I'd say, as a whole, but I've given him a lot of chances, and a lot of people are like, why do you do that? You know, like, he's a shit bag. And I'm like, yeah, but he's my dad and I'm an adult and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I was just trying to take the higher road, be the bigger person, you know? I'm like, I don't care, I'll let it go. But I'm in a thrift store, like a hoarder thrift store, like that you could barely like, you know, even you're squeezing between things and knocking things over. But I find a vintage Eric Lindros toy. I guess this would be a better view of it. It was from like 92 or 96, something like that in the 90s. But my dad, he was like, hey, I got a wedding to go to in Austin and I can come out there. And I'm like, yeah, you could come out, stay with me, blah, blah, blah. And I was in this store and I was like, man, my dad would love that. He was such an Eric Lindros fan. Mm-hmm. Lindros all the time. We ran into him one time at the Berlin flea market in Jersey and he lost his mind. So I saw this and I was like, my dad will love this. He'll think this is so cool. Anyway, my dad gets here, supposed to stay for a little while. And, you know, I wouldn't consider myself like a neat freak by any means. It's like, I can definitely leave dishes in the sink and sometimes I can kick my shoes off and leave them by the couch, but like, I'm not like a horrendous person. You wouldn't walk into my apartment and be like, oh my God, this is what the fuck, you know, this is disgusting. It's like,
right.
Especially with my art collection, I keep things really, I don't like to walk into a home that looks bad. I like everything to look really nice. Just for my own sake. I barely even have anyone here. But anyway, I bought my daughter a like black bath bomb a few days prior. And she used it and rubbed it all over the walls of the tile. And it it stained. And anyway, we're having a good time. My dad's here. We're laughing. We're eating. And then I wake up. And my daughter, who's two at the time, is like, where's Pappy? And I just rolled over in bed and I'm like looking at my phone and I keep hearing her like, where is he? So I get up and I'm like, Dad. And then I see the gifts I got him next to this note. And meanwhile, my kid's like looking under the beds for him. And it's just basically this note about how he couldn't bear to see me swear in front of my kid, smoke in front of my kid. By smoke, he means like use this little jewel, you know. I don't take a big, huge bong rip in front of my kid or anything like that. Cheers. But, yeah, you know, your place is unlivable. You have black mold in your bathtub. And, you know, I can't stand to see you be this way. So I got a plane ticket early to leave. And I hope this really is like a kick in the ass for you to like be a better man. And I was just like, you know, cause that's what my dad did as a kid. I woke up one day and I was like, Mom, I love you. Where's Dad? And she was like, he's gone. Wow. So, you know, when I saw my daughter looking under a bed for my kid or for my dad, I saw red. I was so angry that he could put that same feeling of like, oh, he's gone, like for good.
Mm-hmm. Repeat offender.
Straight to my daughter. And that was it. I was just like, you know, I'm not gonna take the high road with such a piece of shit. But anyway, I took the toy and I like sculpted these little horns on the toy. And I like all this blood coming down the eyes. And it was a really cool little figure. I gifted the original to a friend of mine, but I, you know, had it molded and I reproduced it several times, like in flyers colors, and packaged it up in this like, you know, header where he's all like bloody and weird. And he's got all these like, normally on a rookie card, like for hockey, you have a list of accomplishments on the back, and these are all just a list of like really, really, really terrible things.
That's
perfect. That's good.
Yeah, it's like his birthday is just very, very briefly after the crucifixion, and yeah, and I like took a blowtorch and torched it, and it says like warning, fire hazard, don't leave near a Bible, and
that's cool.
Yeah. I didn't do that. I didn't make this because I don't like my dad, but I did. This originally hurt me a lot to see sitting on my counter next to a note, like while my kid's innocently looking for her grandfather under a bed. Right. So I'd say that would be a pretty good example of one. I'd probably say that would be my best example of one. Aside from Ghost Dad, I made Ghost Dad too. This might be kind of hard to see.
Oh, I love
it. I didn't really know what to sculpt one night, and I was making something really simple. It's just a little ghost with like an open mouth holding a little sleeping baby. And I like made like the bio like dedicated to all the dads that ghosted you, dedicated to all the your dads that may be a ghost already, inspired by Life's Cruel Hand. And also, you know, it made me think about me a lot because unfortunately I have these health issues. I have this super rare disease that I have stage 3 pulmonary sarcoidosis. I have some other weird health stuff going on. So I think about my mortality a lot, which is another reason I make so many of these toys. I'm like, I gotta make my mark. Like, I can't wait around. I mean, nobody can, you know, we're all slowly getting there. But yeah, I look at this toy sometimes and it makes me like almost a little upset. It just looks like a sad, lost dad holding a sleeping little baby that's sleeping and innocently sleeping and feeling safe in her dad's arms.
Right.
Yeah, it reminds me of shitty dads and good dads that are dead, and sometimes makes me think about me being a dead dad, honestly. So yeah, this one too. I'd say those would probably be the two that really, for me at least, sometimes I look at and it makes me feel like a certain way.
Totally.
Yeah. I mean, that's what art does. It makes you feel.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah. Art toys speak to me for some reason. It's like tattoos don't really so much, to be honest. And that's what I found really interesting about that cause piece over there. It's so simple. Those cause figures are so simple. Just two arms, two legs, and X's in the eyes. And the only thing that ever really changes about them is their posture. But their posture speaks volumes to me. And I just found that so interesting when I got into this. I'm like, art's never really spoken to me until now. Like, and well, until I started seeing these things. So yeah, that really inspired me to get into this, is just how loudly it spoke to me. And then once I realized that I was capable of it, law of attraction, it sounds cliche, but I'm like, this is like my blinders are on. I have this big art collection. This is all I care about. It's all I want to do.
Wow.
So yeah,
what a full circle thing going from manifesting to manifesting. And Morgan currently talks about blinders a lot.
Oh, yeah. That's something that's passionate with me, blinders. I'm always going back and forth between whether it's good to have them on or off, because it's a defense mechanism either way. And kind of give just like a little bit of a background. Like, when I was younger, I believed to have like such blinders on, where I was so naive and so trusting and had a one-track mind, but I accomplished so much. Until I started to get hurt and like a little more jaded and like really realize how shitty people can be. So I had to take the blinders off, but it made me see everything else and it distracted me from like my one track mind. So what's better? Like, are you more protected knowing what goes on around you, or are you more protected putting your blinders on and just going forward, but not really knowing what's going on around you? So
I just think that the perfect way to compartmentalize that is to create art like Drew does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the art thing was definitely a healthy way for me to, I know my, at 29, I know how my brain works, and I know it can really, really do me an injustice to allow it to do whatever it pleases. I went through the whole drug thing, and not until I got older did I realize how very lucky I was to walk away from all that. And I did a ton of self-work, and I mean, that's the only reason I'm really sitting here in Texas, so to speak, is, you know, I at one day was like, it's true. I really have to change everything about my life to save my life, or I'll die. And everybody knows it. And that's not why I'm in Texas, but that's why I'm not there. It's not because I have to stay away from my home, but at the time I was like, this isn't really about not doing drugs. This is about reinventing my life to make a livable life for me. But yeah, at one point I had blinders on, and it was just like, get high, get high, get high, get high. And that's how it was with piercing. It was this, pierce, make sure your boss doesn't do this, that. Now that you say it, it's like, yeah, is it healthy to have your blinders on? I guess it depends on what's in your line of focus.
Yeah.
And it's been a long time. And I really didn't talk about the drug thing for a long time, because I have a lot of people that are like, they'll come in my shop and they interview and they're like, yeah, I'm actually 6 months sober, which is not easy to do. And I commend anyone who's doing that. But, you know, for me, when I hear that, when I hear someone talking to my, the owners of my business, and that's part of their resume, is like, I'm 6 months sober, I immediately am like, flight risk, you're in your infancy of not getting high.
Right.
I didn't really start talking about it until I had 10 years of abstinence from my drugs of choice. Like not until I could have this conversation and people could have the confidence that like, this guy's not like a flip flopper and, you know, do heroin next year and then maybe clean up and they go back to rehab. I know a lot of people like that, and I'm not hating on them because it's hard. It's hard. I mean, for me, I just took some of the best advice that I've ever gotten, which was be open to suggestion, which I was not the first go around. I was like, yeah, no, I'm definitely going home to my friends and blah, blah, blah. And then when I messed up the second time, I was like, yeah, no, this is, I'm going to be open to suggestion. And that's what led me to where I'm at. But yeah, throughout those 10 years, I did learn how to, and there were bumps in the road, not like relapse bumps, but you know, depression bumps and
totally,
you know, getting caught up in something, you know, worthless, I guess, that might've been important to me at the time. But yeah, I mean, if I'm not creating an art toy, I'm shopping for them. I'm looking at other toys for inspiration. I'll even buy some toys to make bootlegs out of. I guess long story short, bootlegging a toy is almost what I did here.
Okay.
You toy, you like it and you alter it a little bit and then you put a funny theme on it and you have a bootleg, and it's kind of like pirating, and I guess in a sense it's kind of illegal, but that's kind of the cool part. It's like, ah, fuck you.
Yeah. It's like making it your own too. Well, it sounds like, and again, like I'm not a therapist, I'm not an expert in this at all. But it just sounds like you filled your void in such a healthy way.
Yes.
And completely flipped it on its head, where it was, you know, an addiction to something so unhealthy for you and, you know, your loved ones. And now it's a celebration of the things you can create, and you just chasing the new creation, the new artists, new concepts and stuff like that, which I think is absolutely amazing. Like, I don't know, it makes me smile. Truly.
Yeah, it means a lot to me, you know, to have that recognized. And, you know, even beyond the whole just being into art, it's me, you know, a big part of this is me. Because my daughter knows that I'm sick, unfortunately. There's days where there's been days where I have to explain it. I'm like, your daddy's dealing with this and it sucks and it hurts to talk about. But on the flip side of that, I feel like I have this moral obligation to continue this no matter what, because I'm like, my daughter knows that things have never been totally easy for me. She's never known me any other way. I got diagnosed when she was 3 months old, which was really difficult for me. You know, I don't want to say anything bad about her mother. She has a great mother, beautiful, great mother. But she was military, and I think she's more of like a realist in some sense. She's an artist herself, a great one. But I feel like I guess I'm the influence that's like, you can grow up and do whatever you want, and you don't have to pick this safe road. And whatever you decide to do, just so long as you're very passionate about it, I'll support it. Because, you know, any good idea, in my opinion, comes with a lot of doubt and naysayers. And normally it's from people that care about you that don't want to see you flop. But this is just kind of my way of being like, yeah, I'm about to be 30 and I like playing with toys and making toys. And she tells me all the time, and this is my greatest validation of what I'm doing, is she says, Daddy, I am so proud that you were in a band and you made those CDs, and I'm so proud of you for making toys.
Oh my God.
All the time, I'm like, that you can do that too. Like you can do it. Like anything you want to do. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of me leading by example too. I'm like, you can be a grown up and you don't have to lose your inner child, which I also learned a lot about in rehab, is how important your inner child is, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous. The day they sat us down and had us do art therapy and we had to draw these pictures, and then something, I don't want to break any anonymity here, but an old man drew this picture and I was like, wow, it was just a stick figure holding another little stick figure's hand. And I was like, I just got here. I don't really know you, but like it shows a lot that you drawing this, you must love your son so much. And he's like, I don't have a son. I couldn't have a son. And he was old. And I was like, oh my God.
Wow, yeah.
And then I guess I realized how powerful it can be to sit down and do this stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was just a block of clay that I couldn't think of what to do. So I just was like, roll it into a cylinder and put eyes in it. And then I sculpted a little baby on there and I was like,
oh my God. You didn't realize you were going to do that. And then
so I had no intention of making this at all until it started to come into a shape. And then I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's really interesting how that stuff works. I thought it was ridiculous at first.
No, it is interesting because I feel like a lot of people think that artists have this concept and then they create it, but like I feel like more often than not they realize in the process they're creating something that they didn't even realize that they were like thinking about. Or so what comes first, like the chicken or the egg, the concept or, you know, the finished project? Or is it the finished project and then with it is like, oh my God, I didn't even think that it was going to turn into this amazing multifaceted concept. I love it. Awesome.
Yeah. Drew, where can people find you on Instagram and where can they shop for your art?
So on Instagram, my art page in particular is called Plagued Earth Productions, which really stemmed from me starting to really make these toys in total isolation during a real deal plague. I thought that would be fun to work on. Totally. So yeah, Plagued Earth, or I guess at Plagued Earth Productions on Instagram. And my main account is Drew Baby. The word baby has three Y's. It's just, you know, Drew Baby, three Y's at the end.
Drew Baby.
Yeah, that was a name I made up for myself when Instagram started. I wanted to have a name that was reminiscent of a like little girl's AOL screen name.
Yeah, the
name. Instagram was going to be that serious, but it was. So Drew Baby became what everybody called me. But I kind of like it. It's almost like how like a big, super tough dude gets called, like his nickname's Tiny or something.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's campy. Yeah. It's very campy.
Love it.
And I wasn't always so nice and sweet. yeah, Drew Baby with three Y's, the Plagued Earth Productions. I'd say those are definitely my main media outlets. And I don't really mess around. I mean, Facebook's kind of like,
Facebook sucks.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. All you have to do is post one little blue heart emoji and you'll have 264 comments about your, you know, this snowflake or blah, blah, blah. I never really got into Twitter. And I do have a website. It's a big cartel page for my stuff. And this is a really unprofessional move on my part, but it's plaggedearthproductions.bigcartel.com, but I spelled plagued wrong, and I don't know if I can change it. So instead of, I guess, is this backwards? Yeah. Nope. It's not?
No, I can. No, we can see it. Right?
Yeah, P-L-A-U-G. That's the
plug.
You know, I have link in bio everywhere, so... People get there either way.
Honestly, it goes back to the tattoo thing. They're like, oh, what's the meaning of the misspelling? No, there's no
it's
meaning.
It's just an accident.
It just happened.
That's so good, Ann.
The shit show.
Yeah, that was a shit show.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.